Oh. Dr. Sean, I'm an addict. This basic text, this is my sword. I live what it says. Apply it in my life, my freedom is high. This is my sword. I live what it says. Apply it in my life, my freedom is high. This is my sword. I live what it says. Apply it in my life, my freedom is high. Welcome to everyone who comes here. Narcotics Anonymous. It's truly revolutionized my life. When I came here, I couldn't read this. I found out later that it was written at a fifth grade reading level, or third grade, yeah. Fifth grade reading level. I had a third grade reading level in 2013. They told me when I got here that one thing I had to change, and that was everything. So what you see here today is not what it was when it started. I had to change everything, because I don't know about you guys, but I like to use substances, any substance, foreign or domestic. I grew up in a dysfunctional home. When I was about, it all started like my mother and father got into a fight one day. It was so, I think about it all the time. I'm 3 years old. I'm climbing on my parents' waterbed. I discover a cigar box. I open this cigar box. It's got this stuff in it. It smells like leafy green, like marijuana. I was 3 years old. The next day, it's my birthday. I get a brand new bike, little bitty bike with training wheels on it. It's got these tassels hanging from the handlebars. I'm so excited, I can't even push the pedals. Mind you, the night before I discovered this weed, then I have my birthday party the next day, then the next day, my mom and her sister comes together and she's talking about my dad. She finds a purse in her car with some female underwear in it. My dad had the car on my birthday. My mom and dad have a fight. It's not a good one. He slaps her, busts her lip. When they started arguing, she calls her sister to come pick her up. Her sister comes and picks her up. We're leaving, he's fighting, he busts her lip. Her sister, my aunt, has me on her hip, and she turns around when he hit her and pulls out a gun out of her smock. I'll never forget it. I was 4 years old, and my mother began to beg, "Don't kill him. Please don't kill him." I'm looking at him. She's got me on her hip and she swung around and I'm looking at my dad and my aunt is trying to shoot and she's saying, "Move," telling my mother, "Move." Right then and there, I had become addicted to the chaos. That was when it all started for me. You see, substances turned out to just be the solution. But the real problem had to do with the dysfunction that I grew up in. So when that happened, and she was fixing to shoot him, my mom begged her. She told her boyfriend, take this baby to the car. He took me to the car, and I never forget because he came from Tennessee and he had these bull horns on the front of his car. Real bull horns on the front of his car. And I was like, wow. She told my dad, if you ever touch my sister again, I'm gonna shoot the F out you. I heard all this. That day, I became homeless. 4 years old, bouncing from couch to couch to couch to couch. By the time I was 8 years old, my cousins was already putting me on. Tap his pockets, Sean. Check his boots. Soon as you hear him drop, tap his pockets. Check his boots. Okay. I'm bouncing from family member to family member. My grandmother has 8 children with their own families. Everyone has a family but me. I'm homeless. My mom's still in school. My grandmother comes and picks me up thinking that it would be a good idea if I went with her while my mother finished school. One of my uncles would tell me, Sean, all you would say is, where's my mama? Where's my mama? I didn't find out later on what was going on until I started to read the book of, to read the basic text. I go and I stay with my grandmother. My cousins go in the window, Sean, open the door for us. Don't tell anybody. Okay. I'm doing everything anyone says to me because I'm looking for something that they call love. But I don't know I'm looking for love. I'm looking for my mother. I'm looking for my father. I'm looking for my family. I'm looking to be validated. No one is validating me except for my grandmother, who thinks that I'm her son now because my mom is at school. And I'm with my grandmother and my grandfather. Needless to say, I'm learning from old men how to maneuver in the streets. I'm learning the game at a young age. I'm just doing like they do. And then I realize that I'm much more advanced than the people my age. Because I'm living off of the experiences of all these old people. When I'm a kid, I used to think that I was the devil's recruit because a lot of people went to prison behind the stuff that I start. My grandmother started saying it was devilment. Sean, you just always into something. It was true. Because I would be begging my cousins as time would go on. I would be begging them, come on, guys, you guys help me do this. We can make this methamphetamine. Come on. And when they get back out of prison, they would always tell me the same thing. Sean, you need to do something different. It wasn't that, Sean, you need to do something different because you're killing you, but Sean, you need to do something different because you're killing us. We can't keep up with you. I'm still looking for my mother. I'm still looking for validation. I'm still looking for love. It was probably my grandmother sent me to preschool, and I remembered. My mother was gone, and at that time, I began to like dress up in my aunt's negligees, run down the street, and just like urinate on cars, throw rocks, bust windows, and just act wild. I was looking for validation. I seen some little boys down there acting mannish, cussing. So I said to myself, I'm gonna be a part of those boys. I'm gonna go over there, and I start cussing. The next thing you know, I'm cussing a lot. I have an addictive personality. And just so I'll fit in, I am acting kind of wild and crazy, and now I'm hooked on cuss words, dropping F-bombs as a little boy, acting like I'm grown, like I'm an old man already. I got these two uncles that are living with my grandmother. They're probably in, I'd say, when I was starting school, when I started preschool, they were probably in 8th grade, 9th grade, probably starting high school. Well, these two uncles was like, purple haze all in my brains. Coming home, having these parties and stuff, Jimi Hendrix and doing all these drugs, smoking weed and all this kind of stuff. And I'm looking up to them like, wow, these are my heroes. Wow, these guys, look at how they dress. They were influencing me. I'm 8 years old. I'm still unhappy. One of my uncles comes to me with a little can of Olympia beer, 8 ounce. Comes to me and he says, I'm just like talking. Him and his friend are driving. And he says to me, here, boy, drink this. It'll make you feel better. I didn't even know I was feeling bad. But after I drank it, I realized that, dang, I was feeling pretty bad. I went to sleep. They dropped me off. The next time they had a party, when no one was looking, I think I was about 8 and a half, 9 and a half, I took a drink. Bow. I used to dance a lot, have fun. I was having fun. And then I get a headache and it start like pounding. So, okay, time goes on. I'm doing this for a period of time. I'm developing my habit. I need a head change. It don't matter, liquid or dry, it all gets me high. It doesn't matter what type of substance I would use. I would use candy cigarettes, bubble gum, chocolate, any stimulant. I remember I was a kid, I just picked up a Tic Tac off of the coffee table. Turns out it wasn't a Tic Tac, it was a white. I remember my mom said, where did that pill go? It was right here. Boy, did you take that pill? And she looked at her friend and slapped her, pow! They took me to the hospital and pumped my stomach. It was crazy. It was a stimulant. You know, back in the days, early 70s, it was like pills everywhere, Black Beauties, Red Devils, all that. Whatever that was, I don't know what it was, but I know I took it. I thought it was a Tic Tac. The next thing you know, I liked it. I really liked it. Everything slowed down. You know, when I was in grade school, they came to my mother. I think I was in the first grade. She came and got me, and that was the happiest day of my life. She came and got me from my grandmother's. My grandmother wanted to keep me, but she came and got me after preschool, sent me to kindergarten, and I wasn't happy. I was wanting to be with my grandmother and them. So when I got in the first grade, the teachers came to my mother, and they said to her, Sean has a learning disability. And my mom was like, oh no, not my son. My mom is a teacher. And she was studying to be a teacher at the time. Oh no, not my son. But then when the test would come around where you circled the bubbles, she could interpret that. And when they sent it to the house, she didn't tell me, but she knew that I had a learning disability. But she denied it. No, not my son. So I began to struggle. First grade, I'm struggling. My mom says, well, skip this public school stuff. I'm gonna send you to private Catholic school. She does. Needless to say, I grow up and I'm struggling because come to find out, my eye has like a stigma in it. Instead of picking up the second line, I can make it through the first line, but when it comes to getting the second line, I get lost and I pick up the third line. So nothing made sense to me till I walked into Narcotics Anonymous and got me a basic text. That's why this is my sword. I live what it says. I apply it in my life. My freedom is high. Because when I was like struggling through school, I mean struggling. If my mother would not have taught me how to take the test in high school, I probably wouldn't have passed. I don't know how. And because I was struggling in school, it was easier to be in the streets. And what do you find in the streets? Drugs. I remember I would go to church on Sunday. I never had a problem with being in church on Sundays. It was when it was time to go home and the door opened. It was time to go home. That's where I got into trouble. That's where all the shiny stuff is. That's where all the drugs and stuff like that. That's where it's at. So, not being able to read, I kind of like gravitated towards that. It's a lot easier to maneuver. You ain't got to read nothing. All you got to do is read the signs. Go to the bar, watch him, wait till he drop, go in his pockets, check his boots, take your cousins the money. My cousin showed me, hey, look, this is how you do it. Get these mint leaves, put them in this bag, get this ounce of sherm, pour it in it, then get these match boxes, go ahead and sell this at the park, $25. Or roll this weed up, this dime bag, give it to, sell it at school. So the next thing you know, that's how I grew up. And then I did that pretty much my whole life because it was a lot easier. Of course, my mom would have me going to school and I didn't want to be there. When I got to be about 16 years old, my mom and dad, my mom and stepdad fighting all the time. He on drugs, cocaine. And alcohol. He really liked to drink. So when he was gone, I would drink his drink and fill it back up and stuff like that because I'm feeling depression. Don't know it's depression. I don't know why I'm feeling this way because my parents' name are different last name than my last name. So now I'm really deep into depression. I'm feeling like I'm not worth anything because they all have the same name. So I got a reason to be feeling shame and to feel this way. So I'm using this as an excuse to get loaded. Any chance I get. When I'm about in eighth grade, I'm at a quinceañera thinking that I'm a grown man. And I'm like 14 years old. And one of my partners says to me, I bet you can't smoke. I jumped in his face. I bet you I can. Give me that cigarette. Oh, man, here, take that. Wait. Let me hit that again. It took me 30 years to shake it. At the end of my road, I was smoking 4 packs of cigarettes a day in 2013. Obsession and compulsion. I couldn't stop. It's probably because I come from the earth and it comes from the earth. I don't know whatever it is, but as soon as I took a few puffs, it began my body to have an insatiable craving. The disease of addiction was already in me. I just didn't know it. So when my parents split up all the time, my mom would say to me, "Sean, get the diaper bag, load the car, load the kids. Boom, we go to grandma's. Homeless. Sean, we're going to Uncle Sonny's house now. Homeless. Homeless." Yesterday or day before, I was trying to think about, from the time I was 4 years old, there hasn't been 1 year until I was 42. Yeah, 48, 42, in my 40s, that I haven't been homeless my entire life. And so, the reason I stay in Narcotics Anonymous is because I'm a homeowner today. I bought it myself. But the interesting part is I had a third grade reading level when I came here. So let me go back. I had acquired these resentments toward my family because during that time they were having me do all these different things for them. They were having me do all these different things for them. And then as I grew, I started to see that some of these things that they were having me do wasn't right for a little boy to be trying to do to a grown man. So now I'm deeper in depression and I'm trying to numb that pain. Because I'm feeling like something is wrong with me. Because how could I do this if I don't believe in doing this? But I had, because later on I finds out I was doing this stuff because I was looking for love. And how did I find out? In 2017, I had got clean and I had started messing with this girl in recovery, and I really liked this girl. I used to like this girl, and this girl used to like me. And she called me one day and she said, "Baby, come pick me up. My old man bust me in the head." And I was like, "Dun dun dun dun, here I come. I got you." Shot down there to LA, picked her up, brung her back here, but I remembered I was on probation and I told her, "Do you have any drugs on you?" She said, "No." And I said, "You sure?" And she said, "Yeah, I'm sure." I said, "Girl, you got any pipes or anything on you?" She said, "No." "Is you high?" She said, "No," but she was dancing in the street with no music. She was just dancing. "No, I'm not high." And I said to myself, "No, she ain't high. Get in the truck, girl. Come on." And I put her in my truck and I bring her all the way back to Bakersfield. I get a hotel. And I said, "Well, if she's loaded, then maybe I'll put her in the girls' treatment, I mean, the Girls Sober Living that, you know, I worked for this Sober Living at the time. And I said, maybe I'll just help get her in this sober living. But when I asked her, she was like, no, I'm not ready. So I took her, got this motel room. But every now and then I would come through, and you know what men and women do? Yeah, I would do that. And then she was there. She called me one day. I went over there. It was the last day. I said, you got to do something. You can't stay here anymore. I don't have any more money. So I go in, I show up at the motel, I knock on the door, I go in, there's only one thing in there, her purse. I take my leather coat off, I hang my leather coat on the hanger, and I'm laying there, I'm like, yeah, we finna do something, this is the last day. I lay on the bed, someone knocks on the door, knock, knock, knock. And she says, I said, who is it? And she said, it's the police. And I said, well, answer the door. You know, I'm working at a reputable facility treatment, but I mean, sober living, they know, open the door. The police come right in, push her out the way, get me off the bed, handcuff me, sit me in front of the door on the outside, and they go in there, they get my jacket, and they search it, nothing. They get her purse, and they pull out a broken pipe, a broken meth pipe, and they come to me with it. I'm handcuffed, and I say, that's hers! That's hers! I told you, girl! Don't be having that stuff! I told you! I had recently broke up with my sponsor, and after they gave me a ticket, I was on probation, and they said to me, if you have any run-ins with the law, you're going to do a three-year hitch. So I'm thinking, dang, I'm going to prison. Because a few months before, they had caught me on a wing ding and didn't get me to court on time. So anyways, I go to a meeting and share about it right after this incident had happened. And my sponsor, whom I broke up with, said, was standing there, and I shared about it. How can I keep making these same drug addict decisions, but I'm clean? I got 18 months today. And he looked at me and he laughed. And he said to me, Sean, we've got to get to the root cause of why you're not enough. And I said, what? I'm enough, old man. My sponsor at the time was a master's degree in psychology, a Vietnam helicopter pilot. And he told me that, and I was like, how dare you tell me that I'm not enough? And I said, I'm enough, and he said, no, Sean, if you were enough, you wouldn't need nothing. No sex, no cigarettes, some food, some water, some shelter. That day I learned something about needs and wants. You see, I want a black credit card that says I can go buy a yacht. I just don't want to pay the bill. But do I need a black credit card to go buy a yacht? I learned something that day. He said, you've got to go get to the root cause. So I go back to this treatment center after that, and I have to tell my boss, who just gave me a job, I've been trying to get this job for a while, and this guy says to me, I call him and I said, hey, I just got in trouble with the police. And he said, I don't know if I can have you working with me. And I said, dang, let me ask you a question, Sean. I said, yes, sir. He said, did you get loaded? I said, no, I had 18 months clean. He said, did you get laid? And I wanted to tell him, no, but I told him, yeah, I got laid. And he said, Well, that's what motivated you right there. What I want you to do is go to the house, have this one test you, and have this one. And Sean, what I want you to do is just stay at the house. So I did exactly what he said. And that was the first time that I had second time I practiced honesty. It was the second time. Because, you see, I have an ability to deceive myself. I told my son that he would be better off with his grandparents than with me, his protector. Yes, I'm the father who abandoned his child for a relationship with an inanimate object called cigarettes. Go over there, daddy's smoking. And I didn't realize it at the time, but when he said I wasn't enough, I went back to that treatment place that I was working at, and I was sitting there giving medication, and I saw a pop-up on the computer, and it had a play button, and I pressed play, and it was a guy on a motorcycle, and this guy on a motorcycle, as soon as I pressed play, this song came on. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. All my blue skies turn to gray. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away. And I just start crying. And I remembered when my mom made me go with my grandmother. And I didn't have that. I didn't have that love anymore. I didn't have that security. Nobody believed in me anymore. And I couldn't stop crying. I had occurred abandonment issues, and I had started to search for things in substances, whether it's food, sex, cigarettes, excitement, exhilaration. Narcotics Anonymous promises me freedom. I had been running from freedom. I didn't know that freedom is a responsibility. And it's something that I have to work for. You know, someone said, give me liberty or give me death. And when I was smoking in four packs of cigarettes, I was looking for freedom from active addiction. I could not go one day without it. I could not go one day without someone telling me, that a boy, Sean. I couldn't just be okay, just being okay. It was like madness in my mind. I thought all of you were soulless droids and I was the only one from God. And all of you were sent here to destroy me. Or to keep me from reaching my goal, which is to get back to my Creator. Thank you, Narcotics Anonymous. This is my sword. I live what it says. Applied in my life, my freedom is high, very high. I told you before, I didn't really ever have a problem in church. It was only when the door was open to go home that I couldn't make a half a block before I got into trouble. Until I got to Narcotics Anonymous. And I realized one day that when I became homeless as a child, I was staying on my aunt's, my uncle's, my family's couches or pallets on the floor. It dawned on me. I was 38 years old. My aunt comes in the room. I'm staying with her. The outpatient is in her neighborhood. My address is hers. She gives me a room to stay in. And she comes in, and it's 3:00 in the morning, and she says to me, it's raining. Mind you, I'm smoking four packs of cigarettes a day. I can't afford to smoke. because I'm paying $20 every time they ask me to take a drug test. It's 2013, and she says to me, Sean, get up. And I said, Annie, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, what's up? And she said, I'm gonna rent out your room tonight. And I said, what? Rent out my room? She said, yeah. I was like, Annie, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and it's raining outside. And she said, well, they're gonna give me something to use your room. And I get up and I go out, I'm mad, I sit on the couch, and I remember looking down at my feet because I'm sitting there waiting for the bed bugs to strike. Our house is just filled with them, and I'm waiting for them to strike. Here comes a drug dealer walking in the door. He looks at me eye to eye, and he said, what up, Sean? I'm hot. I don't say nothing. There's nothing I can say because my aunt is giving me a place to stay. So if she's renting out my room, I can't say nothing. It dawned on me. When I was 8 years old, I was living on my aunt's couch. 8 years old. When I was 18 years old, I was living on some other Annie's couch. When I was 28 years old, I was living on somebody else's couch. And when I was 38 years old, I'm back to living on someone else's couch. Now, how could someone have nothing for 30 years in a row? All I had was the ability to score you a pound of dough. I got connections everywhere. Everywhere. I even passed through this city, Cal City, Mojave, everywhere. Because I had to have a connection everywhere in order to be able to go somewhere. Otherwise, I'd be stuck in that one block radius. What I thought was a gift had become a prison for me. There was nowhere I could run. Okay, I'm living a good program. I'm living with my aunt. It's 2013. I'm living in a dope house and I'm staying clean. There's a passage in our book that talks about come hell or high water. I stay clean, regardless of who fall off. We've never seen a person who lives the Narcotics Anonymous program relapse. So, I'm an addict seeking recovery. And if I can find in here what I'm looking for, you guys see this, how big this basic text is? This basic text has numbers and lines. We isolated. We have this thing at my home group. My home group is Living Proof Group of Narcotics Anonymous in Bakersfield. But, we'll talk later about that. So I'm living in my aunt's house. I noticed that I don't have nothing but a habit. I'm going to these meetings. This guy tells me, we go to this retreat in the mountains, and this guy tells me, yo, youngster, it's one thing you gotta change, and that's everything. And I said, how can a person change everything if the person don't know how to change anything? And I thought about it. And I said, okay, I know what. I can change the position of my wallet. I always carried it in my back pocket. I'm gonna switch it and put it in my front pocket, but not on the same side, on the opposite side. and how I always started out with my left foot first, I'm going to start out on my right foot first. Because those are the things that I can do on purpose. Because I'm living in a dope house. I know how I got here. And if I just make the opposite, then maybe it'll take me in the opposite direction. I go to my outpatient and they say, change the way you look at things. The things you look at change. I always saw one big score. Crack valleys, crystal hills, rivers of whiskey flowing to the sunset. And I'm living in a dope house, 38 years old. Just making every decision opposite caused me to get the opposite results. I'm clean. My stepdad in those meetings he used to have, bringing those people to my house. He used to start the fellowship in Bakersfield. He used to bring these people, AA and all them. They had a resentment or whatever, so my stepdad started bringing people to the house, and my mom said, nah, none of that. I was listening to them, and some of those people were still here when I got back here. Gave me that warm, warm hug. Said, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. I went to two meetings back to back in 2013, and there was one guy, his name was John. He had these Elvis Presley sideburns, cold blue eyes, a wife beater with a chain hooked to his wallet, steel toe boots and Levi's. I'm like, the only black in the whole place. They're all whites. I'm already nervous. I grew up kind of racial prejudice, and I'm the only black, and I'm nervous, and this guy looks at me, well, at least I think he's looking at me, and I'm beat up, and it's first meeting, and we get up to pray out, and this guy walks up to over to me, and I said, oh, God, here we go. I'm dead. They're going to lynch me in this month. I'm thinking this in my head. And I stand up, tighten up my stomach. And this guy opens up his arms and hugs me. And he says to me, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. We've been waiting for you. And I wanted to put my head on his shoulder. He's a grown man, I didn't even know. But when he hugged me, I wanted to put my head on his shoulder and say thank you. I left that meeting puzzled by, it ain't like what my stepdad was talking about. These people, they ain't like what you're talking about. Yesterday's people might have been one way, but today's people is something else. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be clean. So don't think that your hug goes unnoticed. We need them. Right now, I'm on this kick about using the language of the literature. Listen. Let me read something to you. Many books have been written about the nature of addiction. This book primarily concerns itself with the nature of recovery. If you are an addict and you have found this book, please, please give yourself a break and read it. My sponsee and I went to a convention in Arizona. I was a speaker. And we started listening to the old timers, and the old timers said, before they print it, before they put one word in this book. He didn't say living clean. She didn't say any of the other literature. She said the basic text. It's basic. Before they put any word in this, they prayed over every word. Now, you know how many different gods we all have together? Your higher power is your higher power. My higher power is my higher power. The higher power, the God of your own understanding. They brought each of their own understandings of God together and prayed over every single word. Now, every word is sacred because it was developed in our prayer together. Whatever you believe in, all walks of life, all faiths. Why does this work in Afghanistan? Why does it work in Turkey? Why does it work in Bakersfield or Texas or Utah? How is that even possible that it works everywhere that drugs are? It deals with the disease of addiction that's centered in my thinking. And I take my thinking with me everywhere. This is a serious tool. You know, a lot of times I see this happening in our fellowship that, you know, newcomers come and they get a basic understanding of what it is. And then they're ready for living clean. When they really don't have an understanding of what compassion really is, what sincerity really is, what kindness really is. You know, a lot of people like me suffer from the disease that tells me things like Spanish proverbs. Ay, 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 ay. Me, 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 me. All about me. That's at the core of the disease of addiction, self-centeredness. It's never about you. And now I flash back to when those guys was having me do those things as a little boy. It was never about them. It was always about me. I'll do whatever you need me to do if I'm gonna get something out of it. That a boy, Sean. Good job. I didn't know that until I ran across the disease of addiction, and then he beat me into submission, and I was looking for relief, and I was able to sit long enough to read because we didn't have cable in the crack house. And I spent my last $10 and bought a basic text. I drove home on fumes. You're talking about developing faith. I learned what faith is. And as a result of learning how to read in this fifth grade reading level textbook, I am a doctor of theology. As a result, I have a real life degree in theology. It's crazy. No, it's serious. Spectacular. I looked at my mom the other day and I walked in her house and we have a brother-in-law who's suffering. His mom has cancer, but I'm able to pull my family together and rally with them. And one day, my stepdad offered me a beer, a drink. And I looked at him straight in his eyes and I told him, that might be okay for you, Dad, but that's not okay for Sean. Now, anybody who's offering me something that's ultimately going to lead to my demise don't really care about me. And that means I cannot be in your life. Whether it's a cigarette, don't offer it to me. You do it. That's your thing. I believe cleanliness is next to godliness. Me, that's me. And I'm not talking about being under the influence of any substance. I'm talking about freedom from active addiction. So if I'm addicted to sniffing bicycle seats, freedom from active addiction. If I'm addicted to that a boy, Sean, freedom from active addiction. If I'm addicted to having credit cards, freedom from active addiction. And the price that I pay is what I give away. We can only keep this by giving it away. So, and you can ask my sponsees when I work with them. I'm serious about their life so that they'll be serious about their life. I was talking to someone at the table and I was like, why is it, how is it that drugs are everywhere on every continent? What is that? There ain't no safe place. We keep what we have only with vigilance. That means always on guard, because you know it's gonna happen. It's beating you up and it'll use you to beat you. It'll use me to kill me. That part. I don't see anybody else. When I'm wrapped up in the disease of addiction, it has nothing to do with the actual substances. It has everything to do with some of the things in my character, the selfishness. I went through a time when I did nothing for no one who didn't do nothing for me. Recently, we put on a couple of events, and they asked us, how much did you make? And I was like, what? Make? Sean invests in his people. Every one of them. When I see children hugging their families, skate parties, laser tag events, video games where we give out game cards, one little girl about 2 or 3 feet tall came to me and looked at me and stomped her foot and raised their hands and did me like that. And I was like, oh, baby. Picked her up, because addiction is a family disease. You might not think those children see you. That's how I start cussing. The disease of addiction will, it don't discriminate. It don't just want you. It want you and will use you to get your daughter and your son and your cousin and your mama. And everyone who loves you hurts when you hurt. We just don't know it. We think it's all about us. But that's the core of the disease of addiction. Has nothing to do with the actual substances. It's the self-centeredness. Now, I know about alcoholics and alcoholism. My family was rum runners. When I got here, my grandfather was making it on the stove. My grandmother was sitting at the table with one of their partners. Robert, you putting too, you. Turn the fire down. He's making corn whiskey on the stove. My uncle walks in with a bottle of sugar. Maybe that's where I got it. Fast forward, they told me, you have to chase recovery like you was chasing the sack. I go hard in the paint. People die from the crumbs that fall off my plate. I don't know anybody that did as much dope as me. I know there was somebody, but I just didn't know anybody in real life. I was trying to drown the thoughts, the negative thoughts, the low self-worth, the low self-esteem that I had, the me, the poor me-itis. I'm trying to kill it. Thinking that if I'm not here, the world would be better off. I'm not okay just being okay. I had to work a lot of steps, a whole lot of steps. This time I worked, I'd say since I've been clean, my clean date is April 18th, 2013. That's coming up. That's coming up. And, well, they say they throwing me a party at the Smoked Out Barbecue. It ain't really for me, but I'm going to be celebrating that day. If I live another day, I'm going to be celebrating that day. No fronts, one day at a time. I understand that, but this day. And so we work a lot of steps. You can ask my sponsee. I'm real about it. I don't have time to play, because this ain't no game. This is life, death, life or death struggle. And if you don't see that, well, I'll be here when you get back. If you're not worth saving, I'll be here when you get back. But if you're worth saving and you're willing to do the effort to get it, it says, if you want what we have and you're willing to do what we are willing to do, you know, you've got to be willing. I can't tell you what to do, but I'm willing to save me. I'm willing to go to one extra meeting. I'm willing to stay on the phone one extra minute. I'm willing to work the steps with one extra newcomer. I don't really have any women I sponsor, but recently I have been starting to sponsor women. But not like you think, because I've been starting to sponsor families. I'm starting to sponsor children. I'm working behind the scenes to find a place for Narcotics Anonymous to have a home. Because they say if you don't have a home group, then you're homeless. But most of our groups don't have a home. They're all riding the backs of other organizations. And I've seen this a long time ago, because when my mom told my stepdad, you've got to do something different. They can't come here. They all left. He started back drinking. My heart was crushed again. My son, Sean, he doesn't talk to me. Remember, I told you. I told him, go over there. Daddy is smoking. He looked at me one day. I tried to tell him something. And he gritted his teeth at me and snarled. Arr! And this son, he's very skillful with his hands and his feet at the same time. So I was like, dang, I hurt this boy bad. What am I going to do? One of my friends telling me, Sean, well, look, why don't you start calling him once a week and just keep calling him, even if he don't answer. I started calling him. Months go by. Months. I'm getting discouraged. But I learned something about commitment. And I learned something about consistency. And I've learned a little bit more about communication and how to talk to people. My son answered the phone last week, and I talked to him. My son was like, Dad, I feel like we're like the same, just generations apart. And I was like, boy, you alone, you lonely too? And he said, yeah, Dad, I'm kind of lonely. Yeah, I'm out here trying to make it. I said, boy, look, if you need something, call me once a week. I recently went through a divorce this year. I was married for like 4 years. It was crazy. I started a nonprofit organization, and then we're finding ways to feed people and all this stuff, and I just get married to this girl, and I get married to this girl, and then COVID happens. I'm stuck in the house with this woman. Oh my God. It was a bad experience. I'm just saying, I thought I loved her when we were separate. But when COVID happened, we were like together, and I didn't think about how the way I talk to a woman could be the difference between life and death. I'm just serious. Because sometimes I would be so hard that I would look in her eyes and she would be like very angry, very, very angry. And then we're going through this divorce, and as we're talking to the judge was telling me something about I got to take these classes, she tells me, on, you know, spousal, whatever, relations or whatever. So I do. Turns out the words that I use can break a person. But the words that I use were the words that I found in the street coming up. And so I worked on my words. I went, pastor in his church. I'm doing a lot of work in the community. But most of all, I'm serving others in a real way. My sponsees, the community, you, your children. And that's really what it's about. It's not about me anymore. It's about those that are coming after me. So I try to carry this message clean. You won't hardly hear too many swear words, because that's what I learned in the street. And it's one thing you gotta change, and that's everything. So I changed the way I walk, changed the way I talk, and I changed the way I talk to people and reach out. So with that, I hope you guys got something. My story was all over the place, but thank you for allowing me to share. My name is Sean.